Please note that this podcast contains information regarding sensitive events, including domestic violence, assault, sexual abuse, as well as other triggering events such as murder. This podcast is intended for mature audiences.
Welcome to Afterglow, the unveiling of the Idaho cult, episode 3, Family Chaos. This podcast will take you down the deepest of rabbit holes as it unfolds. This story is so compelling, so bizarre, and so heinous, it's impossible to look the other way. Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow were dedicated in the most horrible way to an ideology that should only be fiction. Instead, their ideology put them behind bars. Join us as we explore the lives, lies, and diabolical crimes of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. I'm your host, Kathy Brooks. Please follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Parental alienation is a situation in which one parent uses strategies, sometimes referred to as brainwashing, alienating, or programming, to distance a child from the other parent. Parental alienation, defined as when one parent's relationship with his or her child is harmed by the other parent. This can have devastating consequences. The alienating parent might badmouth the other parent in front of the child to gain his or her loyalty, or the parent might reconstruct past events to make the child believe horrible and untrue things about the other parent, or prevent the other parent from spending time with the child. Last time we were together, we left off on the irreconcilable differences of Joe Ryan and Lori Cox Ryan. After I put a lot of time researching the entire custody battle between Joe Ryan and Lori Vallow, I clearly see Lori as a manipulative, selfish person. A person that considered her daughter Tylee her property. If Lori did not plot to kill Joe Ryan, she did it bit by bit by bit with a never-ending battle. I've been told by Alex Cox's, Lori's brother, Alex Cox's ex-fiance, that Joe was not a great guy. He clearly had plenty of faults. And his sister Annie Cushing has corroborated that information. However, I don't believe that Joe Ryan was evil. Now, Lori, she's another story. She never gave Joe or Tylee a moment of peace when it came to this custody battle. The battle over Tylee was extremely stressful to Tylee. Tylee, as a small child, wound up in the hospital more than once with a severe, serious illness of pancreatitis. Pancreatitis can be life-threatening. Pancreatitis, also called pancreas inflammation, is an inflammation of the organ, the pancreas, lying behind the lower part of the stomach. Pancreatitis may start suddenly and last for days, or it can occur over many years. It has many causes, including gallstones. And poor Tylee, as a small child, had to suffer. Physical illness can be the result of stress, and children, especially, do not know how to manage their stress. They internalize things. Joe states that he did not have any contact with Tylee for a year and 3 months from the time she was 3 to 5 years old. What's interesting in this story, Lori's attorney, Ted Terry, Lori's first attorney in this battle between her and Joe Ryan, unexpectedly suffered an untimely death at age 56 years old while this battle was going on. Austin attorney Edwin J. Ted Terry Jr., age 56, passed away on November 22, 2006 after suffering a heart attack. Ted was well known and respected in the Austin legal community as a brilliant trial lawyer. However, he died at 56 years old. people connected to Lori tend to have untimely deaths. There's no evidence or anything that anything Lori did caused her attorney to die. But again, as we move on in this story, you will see it is quite common for people around Lori to drop dead unexpectedly and untimely death. But a dead attorney did not stop Lori.
Now listen to this. I'm going to show you part of a recording of Lori describing her battle with Joe Ryan. We'll get into more of this later, but listen for a minute.
I had been married to someone who was very awful, who raped my children, and I had divorced him and gotten away from him, and he had joined the church. He spoke in state conference. Everyone thought he was wonderful. He was very good showman of all those things, and after we were divorced, he told everybody that I was this lying, crazy Mormon and got up in court and said all these horrible things about me and turned it around to where the judges believed him instead of me. And he was constantly trying to get custody of my three-year-old daughter and just to rub it in my face. And I went through a lot of years of this kind of hard stuff. And I was going to murder him. I was going to kill him, like the scriptures say, like Nephi killed him, just to stop the pain and to stop him coming after me and to stop him coming after my children. And I was just, I just felt I couldn't take it anymore. And I would go through the scriptures and find all the things, like, if he comes against you once, if he comes against you twice, if he comes against you three times, then you can kill him. It says it in the scriptures. And I'm like, there it is. There's my answer. I don't want to do anything that's wrong. I did not have a murderous heart.
The custody battle continued. During the battle, Lori was interviewed after reporting Joe for sexual abuse of the children. Lori, in this interview, said that Joe's sister, Annie Cushing, told her to get the children away from Joe. Lori said that she knows that Joe had hundreds of gay porn on his computer. Remember this detail later. Seems to be a common accusation in this family. The allegations were quite horrendous. Joe Ryan was accused of engaging in sexually deviant behavior with Colby and Tylee. Reportedly, Colby made several outcries that beginning when he was 7.5 years old, Joe sodomized him on multiple occasions over the course of 2 years and forced him to drink sperm from a jar. Now, all of this information comes from over 1,700 pages of legal documents that are filed in the court in Austin, Texas, Travis County. Lori had reported to officials that Tylee told her that Joe had crashed into her 2 times a day. Tylee never made a formal outcry. The information came from Lori. However, it is noted that Colby did make a formal outcry. As far as Colby goes, the case was closed and identified as unable to determine by CPS. The Hayes County DA took the case before the grand jury and it was denied. Joe was not indicted. Remember that as we go on. Lori's allegations regarding Tylee were ruled out by CPS. It should also be noted there was no physical evidence of Colby being assaulted. The therapist that was seeing Tylee stated that Tylee does not understand yet why she is coming to therapy. She stated she has referred to her father on her own, but refers to him as Joseph, which the therapist did state that's not normal. She stated that Tylee had not said anything concerning to her. She felt that Lori may be pushing Tylee too hard to talk. And she was asked by the detective if she had any concerns that Colby was being coached by his mother. She couldn't give a definitive answer on that. She had spoken to Lori and asked her not to push Tylee to speak, but Lori did not take that advice. As far as Colby's outcry, law enforcement described it as suspect due to the inconsistencies in his story. There was also concern regarding the unwillingness for Lori to provide law enforcement with Colby's mattress, since that could be crucial evidence in an investigation. In these documents, it states that Tylee's therapist said that during the sessions, Tylee would state that she didn't want to talk about it. She didn't want to talk about the issues with her father or the sexual abuse allegations. The investigator spoke with everyone, the nanny, Joe Ryan's sister, Annie Cushing, Joe's brother, CPS workers, Charles Vallow's ex-wife, her attorneys, basically everyone except the McDonald's drive-thru workers. But along the way, Charles, Lori's fourth husband, was entangled in his own terrible battle with his ex-wife. I am not going to use the name of Charles' ex-wife during this podcast. I'm just going to refer to her as his ex-wife. I don't feel it's necessary to expose her or her sons when it comes to the Lori Vallow Daybell debacle. I do want to give you the information, however, since it shines such a beacon on Lori's personality, behavior, and manipulations. It's very clear to me that Lori thrives on fighting, lawsuits, and family chaos. This show is produced, edited, and narrated by me, Kathy Brooks. I am also the creator of the YouTube channel Left Undone, Incomplete Investigations, where we have followed this case since January of 2020. We also have a wonderful community with live streams where we talk all things true crime. If you're enjoying the show and would like to support this one-woman show, please consider donating to Afterglow, the Idaho Cult series. You can donate a few ways, and all links are in the show notes below. You can donate through PayPal, Cash App, or buy me a coffee. No donation is too small. Thank you again. And back to the episode. On April 9, 2007, Charles's ex and mother of Charles' two sons filed an affidavit with the courts for support of extraordinary relief. On April 10, 2007, she filed a request for a temporary restraining order against Charles. The affidavit states, "I am bringing the suit based on several facts and a number of incidents that have taken place which cause me grave concern for the safety and emotional well-being of my children." She goes on to say, "I fear for the emotional growth and mental stability of my children when they are with their father. I believe that our sons could be in significant danger of sexual abuse, narcotic overdose, and/or physical danger while under the care and control of Charles Vallow. I request that possession be suspended between Charles Vallow and our sons until the court makes orders that will protect the health and safety of my children." The following reasons were listed for her request. "For the past 10 months, Lori Vallow, my son's stepmother, has been embroiled in a bitter custody battle with her ex-husband, Mr. Joseph Ryan, including scathing allegations of sexual abuse. In this ongoing litigation, Mr. Tom Ware, a guardian ad litem, has been appointed to look after the interests of the children. Mr. Ware, having heard the evidence, allegations of the parties, has now suggested to the court that both Lori Vallow and her son Colby undergo psychosexual evaluations. Whether it is because Colby has been a victim of sexual abuse or a deviant proclivity, I cannot say. However, my sons have made several allegations of sexual abuse at the hands of their stepbrother, Colby, while at the Vallow house. One of the sons has also shared this information with his therapist. The boys also revealed that Colby witnesses Charles and Lori Vallow engaging in sexual relations. Colby has also left questionable telephone messages for my son saying, 'I miss the things we do at night.' Further, I found a provocative photo of Colby's little sister, Tylee, 4 years old, to my son's cell phone. Their father is aware of the sexual abuse allegations by his sons against his stepson and that Colby has been ordered to undergo psychosexual testing and has taken no precautions to protect his sons or even investigate the allegations. I feel the Vallow household is an unstable and dangerous place for my children. Charles' erratic behavior is evidenced by telephone messages left on my son's telephone, in which Mr. Vallow is rambling, incoherent, and his speech was slurred. Another area of concern arose when my son came to me and said he was having trouble sleeping and asked if I could give him a sleeping pill. A commercial for the prescription sleep aid Lunesta came on television. He pointed to the television and stated, "That's what Dad gives us to sleep." In January, my son told me, "Dad and Lori give us all kinds of those green Advil and Lunesta so we could go to bed early. They practically shove it down our throat." Mr. Vallow is not only abusing prescription drugs himself, but is giving them to our children. I have consistently had problems with Mr. Vallow taking our children for medical treatments, seeking out medical attention when none is warranted, and even going so far as to have a surgical procedure done on one son without my consent. Charles made an appointment to have a non-FDA-approved blistering cream applied to our son's chest. When Charles was informed that Dr. Vernon's would not apply the cream based on my insistence that not be treated, Charles called his plastic surgeon and had a prescription issued in his own name. Additionally, I'm concerned about the overall stability and environment of the Vallow household that has hindered my children's emotional stability. While at their father's house, they witnessed excessive fighting between Lori and Charles. One son has described to me one such incident that took place while the whole family was riding in the car. Lori was pulling on Charles's arm while he was controlling the steering wheel, causing the car to swerve. My son was terrified that they were going to crash. And when he told me the story, he began to cry. I fear for the emotional growth and mental stability of my children when they are with their father. I believe the boys could be in significant danger of sexual abuse, narcotic overdose, and/or physical danger while under the care and control of Charles Vallow. I request that possession be suspended between Charles Vallow and our sons until the court makes orders that will protect the health and safety of my children. Along with therapy and family counseling for everyone, the recommendation was to remove Tylee from the home she shared with the brother, stepbrothers, Charles and Lori. I'd recommend that Tylee live solely with Lori based on all these allegations. This also could cause some issues for Colby and even recommended that perhaps he live temporarily with his grandparents. And this would mean Lori would have to live apart from Charles. One of the options for Tylee was to live in a possible foster care where she could have her parents visit. One of the requirements for the boys, Charles and Lori, were to install video surveillance equipment in Charles and Lori's home. In a document on 4/26/2007, Charles Vallow installed a motion-activated video recorder that would capture the behavior in the bedroom of Colby Ryan, another one in the bedroom of our two sons, and a third in the family room downstairs. The video recorder was always to remain on during Mr. Vallow's visitation with his sons. When it all came down to it, they came up with the home rules, including the video surveillance. Tylee cannot have contact with her siblings unless she is in visual and hearing range of an adult supervisor who will provide and impose the necessary boundaries. If children are in the bedroom with Tylee, the door must be open. Tylee should use the bathroom by herself. No other persons should be present unless she needs help. Such help would be provided by an adult in appropriate fashion. No one is to sleep in Tylee's bedroom other than Tylee. Everyone must be appropriately dressed at all times. Tylee must not be exposed to any sexual stimuli, pictures, songs, magazines, videotapes, movies, or other materials of a sexual nature. The parents, guardians, and their agents must not speak to Tylee about this case, about this litigation, or about anything sexual in nature. If Tylee makes any type of abuse outcry, Tylee's individual therapist and parents' therapist must be contacted immediately. And the parents agree to abide by the Travis County Children Bill of Rights. we all have had to adapt for the last year and a half to a new normal. Wearing masks, social distancing, just to name a couple. But normal life and normal routines have changed. During this time, I started ordering my groceries through Instacart. You can shop all your favorite stores on a single order. The products you love from your local stores, these products can be delivered in as fast as 1 hour. Instacart highlights deals to help you save money. Instacart will pick the freshest produce and keep your eggs fresh too. My 84-year-old mother loves using Instacart. In a recent order, she was able to get a new microwave and toaster. So you see, it isn't just food items. You can help support this podcast by clicking on the link in the show notes below. Plus, you can get free delivery on your first order of $10 or more. Now back to the show. On July 27, 2007, Joe Ryan was granted a temporary restraining order against Lori. This order forbid Lori from changing Tylee's school or withdrawing her, and that Joe take possession of Tylee until further orders. Joe and Lori literally battled over Tylee for the rest of Joe Ryan's life. This battle was never ending. It was a fight over Tylee. Fight over child support, fight over visitation, custody, everything. And as you can see, with all this stress, chaos, and instability in the home, Tylee had to be suffering. And like I said, it showed both physically and emotionally. As far as Joe Ryan was concerned, they did a very thorough psychosexual evaluation on Joe. Some of the points made was that he had previously lived with another woman that had two male children, and allegations of these kind were never anything he was accused of. Joe Ryan was in the military from 1976 to 1980 and never received any type of disciplinary action. He was also awarded Good Conduct Medal. He was honorably discharged in 1980. The results of Joe Ryan's psychosocial evaluation stated that the evaluation failed to reveal any data supportive of the common results seen with pedophiles. The case went before a jury trial. The jury needed to answer two questions: should Joe's parental rights be terminated, and who will have conservatorship over Tylee? There had also been a grand jury reviewing the allegations of Joe being a pedophile around the same time. The jury came back with a verdict of no to remove Joe's parental rights. So Joe did not lose his parental rights over Tylee, but they did give Lori full custody of Tylee. However, unbeknownst for some reason to everyone involved in the case, in the interim, the grand jury had already denied to indict Joe on any pedophile sexual abuse crimes. So with that result, Joe requested a second trial after this information was revealed. Jurors from the trial all signed attestations stating, "I was a juror in the case styled in the interest of Tylee Ashley Ryan, a child. Had I known that the criminal charges pending in Hayes County against Mr. Ryan were declined prosecution on October 10, 2007, I would not have voted to appoint Mrs. Vallow managing conservator of the child." But while Joe was filing court documents and preparing for a second trial, the day that that trial was to commence, Lori decided to move to Arizona. Although supervised visitation and reunification was actually court ordered, Lori did not show up at Kids Exchange for the first meeting. However, on February 2nd, 2008, in Texas, they did meet at Kids Exchange for the second meeting, even though it did still appear that Lori was living in Arizona. After Joe picked Tylee up for the supervised visit with the supervisor, her name was Ms. Dulonsky, they noticed that they were being followed by a maroon dual-wheeled pickup truck and a white pickup truck with a toolbox. In view of what happened with the taser incident with Alex, Joe called 911. They told him to go to the public place and the sheriff would meet him there. They instructed him to stay in his car with the flashers going. At about an hour later, the county sheriff deputy appeared and got the license plates of the trucks. Joe was told to go ahead home. During this process, he called Sergeant Carter from the Austin Police Department. Sergeant Carter had previously been part of the security detail at Kids Exchange when the exchanges were made. Sergeant Carter told Joe to go in the house, lock the doors, and call the police to report that the pursuing truck team had showed up at Mr. Ryan's neighborhood and they were parked around the corner from his house. He was instructed to call the Williamson County authorities to check on the two pursuers who were parked near his home. The Williamson County authorities never called him back. Then it was time to get back to Kids Exchange for the return. He called Sergeant Carter again, who told him to wait 20 minutes and then go to Kids Exchange, where Sergeant Carter said he would be able to provide security for the return trip. Joe called Kids Exchange and told them that he was going to be a little bit late, but they fined him $10 for being late and said he had plenty of time to work it out. By April, there were reports to the court that the visitation plan was significantly blocked by Lori Vallow's decision to move herself and her children to Arizona. In the documents, it reads, the visitation plan, as outlined by the court on February 20th, 2008, has been significantly blocked by Mrs. Vallow's decision to move herself and her children to Arizona soon after the order was put in place. That decision has stalled the reunification plan designed by the court. Ms. Vallow does have the right, as the sole managing conservator, to make the move. However, in order for the court visitation plan to move forward, I believe it is imperative that Tylee live in Austin, Texas from mid-May until school begins in August of this year. Lori was flying Tylee 2 to 3 times a month from Phoenix to Austin to have her visitation with Joe Ryan. And during all that, she began to say she was not able to afford the fees involved in these psycho evaluations and everything that they needed to pay for. One of the doctors was Dr. Laredo, and Lori stated she doesn't have the money to pay for Dr. Laredo's retainer fee. This could easily be true because they were living in two separate homes in two different states and, of course, paying for that back and forth travel. And they go on to say, I believe Ms. Vallow is convinced and will probably remain convinced that Mr. Ryan sexually assaulted her children and threatened their lives, regardless of any evidence to the contrary. It is not reasonable to think that she could approach this reunification plan with the full intention of supporting this relationship between Tylee and her father. The move to Phoenix supports a belief that this effort can be ignored and avoided. It also continues to support Tylee's perception that her life is separate and distant from her father, while adding the strain of frequent air travel for a young child. Experts agreed that the case had become very dramatic and unsettling to both the parents and Tylee. They quoted that it's important for Tylee to find her identity of a child of both of these parents. In the meantime, Joe Ryan was also speaking with Charles's ex-wife and learned about a lot of the allegations that she had brought forth. Joe Ryan sent an email to Lori and Charles. It appears the tables have turned significantly. Charles, you are 2 months behind on your child support. The health care for your children has been terminated for non-payment. Your house payments, car payments for both cars appear to be behind, and not sure if you can squeeze any more equity of your upside-down position with your house. Also appears the ranch Lori thought you owned is under another person's name, and you just borrow. You have played all your cards, and it appears you are a complete wreck at this point. Well documented for drug, steroid, and alcohol abuse. Don't need to comment incongruence with Mormon principles and doctrines that Lori abuses but values at the same time. It also appears you transferred your great trait of physical abuse to Colby and now he is acting out per your instructions against his half-sister. Make no mistake that I am completely concerned about Tylee, and you have completely failed as a step-parent. I could not be more disappointed in who you really are, and more importantly, the values you transfer to innocent children. I also believe professionals have you pegged correctly as the stereotypical pedophile and will not rest until you are investigated for who you really are. Let me be very clear, you are scum, and I am now going to make sure you read this email and realize everything is about to turn on you quickly. You played your sick cards, showed your true colors, and demonstrated your complete lack of manhood to fulfill your obligations to your family and children. Also, do not call me with your usual BS. And he quotes what Charles had said in a letter from episode 2. You don't know who I am, but when we hit you, it will be quick. Let's make no mistake. You are a coward and refuse to be subpoenaed is 100% proof. You never showed up for the trial or any hearings, telling me the steroids probably took their effect to shrink your manhood to the size of a pea. He goes on to say, be a man and stand before the court. I know John Hendura, who's Lori's lawyer at the time, has probably taught you how to be a man. And he is also subjected to the court for using the same unprofessional and demonizing tactics. So please do forward to him to present at the next hearing. Maybe you and John share more than we thought. He says you owe him $50,000 just for Lori. What do you owe him for your ex-wife? You said you had everything, but appears to be another BS story with your attorney, court-appointed therapist, and other professionals to help the children. I noticed in your email you have all kinds of money to fight, but it seems to be the same size as your manhood. Must be a smaller than expected. And reason Lori has moved to Phoenix to live with her brother, who also has some legal problems. By the way, Tylee thinks Alex checked into a hotel, so just as well. Read this email, your email in the thread, the book of Genesis, and then realize there are many parallels in that book with Joseph. Complete trial, including Anne Cushing. And now it is all going to come against both of you, since you are not the sharpest tacked. Tylee is the colorful coat. Then follow the rest of the pictures so you don't have to read too much. Game on, dude. And you don't seem to be doing too well right now. By the way, Lori appears to have affairs before she gets divorced. But I am sure that won't concern you, since you are a real man's man. Apologize to put this on Lori's email and would prefer to send directly to you man to man. Drop me a line when you get a chance. We'll be serving you shortly. Joseph Ryan. He also emailed Lori an email on May 21st, 2008, and Lori did forward it to her attorney saying, John, this is the worst. Please, I don't want him contacting me, Lori. The email said, Lori, I spoke with Charles's ex-wife yesterday concerning some interactions between the boys and Tylee to see if she can talk to him about a few things. During the brief cordial conversation, she mentioned that Charles is behind on child support, other payments, and the kids' medical coverage has been canceled. Not sure if this is for Tylee as well, and should not, since it is my understanding she cannot be on two policies. But that's not the reason for this email. I have Tylee covered for medical and dental on my policy. And he gives the policy information, the copayment information, blah, blah, blah. Tylee and I had a great visit with lots of pictures and videos from both days. We also went through the family pictures of us, and the look on her face when she saw you holding her the day she was born was priceless. Her singing is absolutely beautiful, and I can tell you, you have been working with her on that. Nice job. We also went through the Book of Mormon from the Kimballs, and she was singing her scripture songs right after. On Colby, I'm sure all the moving and transient stuff is very hard on him. Tylee's head was sensitive to the touch when Ruth went to put her little hair clippy in. And then she said that Colby pushed her so hard, her head went through the wall. She also mentioned that her head hurt and described a headache-type symptom. This is concerning to me, as you can tell, and I just want to do whatever I can to help. Tylee is our child and Colby her brother, so that makes us a connected family. Please take Tylee to the doctor to have her head checked for a concussion. This is why I am sending the medical information. If you need help with the copay, please have them call me, and I give them my card over the phone. On child support, as I mentioned in court, I get paid once a month, and they cannot change that. Believe me, I tried to help with the child support situation. Given the news on Charles, I am sure it is even more critical. So I am trying to find an answer to change the cycle. So clearly, there was some problems in paradise between Lori and Charles at this time. And that's why Joe was saying that Tylee said that Lori went to stay with Uncle Alex, etc. So now Joe is trying to be very kind and sweet to Lori in this email. There's a whole lot of manipulative people in this whole situation. But again, I don't believe that Joe was evil. And Lori, on the other hand, well, fast forward to 2020 and we know how that went down. Back to the email. I will continue to send my child support payment to SDU so it is available to you at the same time my transfer hits the bank to get the $2,200 to you ASAP. Hang in there. I know the situation with Charles must be very frustrating, disappointing, and even somewhat embarrassing. Also, if you have the invoices for Leslie Smith, please send to me either by mail or email if you have electronic copy from her. I want to make sure she gets paid. Also give Leslie my insurance information so she can direct bill for Tylee's visits. Since I think they may be covered under my plan, I spoke with Leslie and she does not want to give me the medical reason code for Tylee's visit, but that is required. Last, Tylee was very tired and hungry on Sunday during the drop-off. But once I was holding her, she calmed down immediately. Too cute watching her eat Sonic cheese sandwich with one half in each hand. Leslie called me around 3 and Tylee was picking out her airplane gifts from Magic Target, not Super Target. I know the visits are difficult for you as well and just want you to know you can always call my cell when Tylee is with me. As you know, we don't have much time together. So hopefully the conversations will be short and nothing to upset her. She is a beautiful little girl, and I just want you to know that I will always love you as her mother. Take care, Joseph. So as things move forward, the court continued to be involved in this battle, and experts with working with Tylee, Lori, Colby. There was to be a review of the case, and one of the documents that was filed regarding an update or progress of Tylee stated, first, Tylee's health has improved, and she seems to be doing well. Leslie Smith, her therapist, has raised concerns about the level of trauma Tylee experienced in the hospital and the stress she has continually experienced throughout this conflict. In light of all of this, Tylee appears to be resilient and happy about the visits with her father, according to Ms. Smith, Dr. Wilcox, and the supervisor, Ruth Delansky. The treatment team invited me to participate with them in their meeting on July 1st, 2008. Visitation, treatment issues, and clinical concerns were discussed. At that time, there were concerns raised regarding Tylee's mother misrepresenting information, primarily regarding Tylee's medical intake forms. At the same meeting, Ms. Smith informed us that Tylee reported being happy about the visits with her dad and wanting those visits to continue during their last session. Ms. Smith then reported that Tylee added something along the lines of, "I am scared about overnights." When Ms. Smith questioned her about this, she said something like, "Because Joe molested me and Colby." When Tylee's mom came in the room towards the end, Ms. Smith reports that Tylee looked at her mother and said, "I told her which raised a lot of concern with the experts' concern of Tylee being coached by Lori of what to say. So when this was brought up, she goes on to say, I immediately made an appointment to meet with Tylee that week. Tylee seemed happy and healthy and relaxed. She reported to me that she has fun and wants to keep seeing her dad. She also told me she was scared about the overnights. But when I asked her why, she said she's afraid to spend the night away from mommy. She says that she does spend the night away from mommy with her grandma sometimes. She went on to say, I've made efforts to find out any other concerns with her, but she said that was all that worried her. She again mentioned that she had fun on the visits with her dad. So this raised quite a bit of concerns, and they all agreed that they were going to meet on July 8th to talk with Lori and discuss these concerns. And Dr. Wilcox was going to meet with Tylee and her father to, again, discuss the concerns on that same date. The treatment team met again on July 14th, 2008, and they presented this information for the court's review. On June 30th, 2008, Tylee told Leslie Smith that she doesn't want to visit during overnights because Joe molested her and Colby. Later in documents, Joe points out that Tylee actually used the word molested. Now remember, Tylee was born in September of 2002. This is June of 2008. She's not even six yet, and she's using that vocabulary. She would not at that age even understand what that meant, much less the word. On July 3rd, 2008, Tylee told Dr. Wilcox that this happened when she was 4 years old. But when Dr. Wilcox asked her if she ever saw her dad alone when she was four, Tylee said, no, that wasn't right. That wasn't last year. It was 4 years ago when she was one. On July 3rd, 2008, again the same day, Tylee also said she doesn't want to spend overnights with Joe because she didn't want to be away from her mommy, and she gave no other reason. July 7th, 2008, prior to a session, Lori informed Leslie that Tylee reported seeing needles in Joe's bathroom. During that session, Tylee told Leslie that she saw needles in Joe's bathroom. On July 11th, 2008, Lori referred to Charles Vallow as daddy to Tylee when they came to Dr. Wilcox's office. She informed Dr. Wilcox that they always refer to Mr. Vallow as daddy. July 11th, again, Tylee told Dr. Wilcox that she doesn't want to talk with Joe about being molested. When asked about that, Tylee became tearful and said, he might be mad because maybe it wasn't true. On July 12, 2008, Supervisor Kate Caswell reported that Tylee was taking pictures of Joe's bathroom with her cell phone camera. When Kate asked her why she was doing that, Tylee informed her that her mommy told her to take pictures of Joe's bathroom. Later, there is an addendum to that that says that mommy told her to take pictures of Joe's house, not just the bathroom. On July 14th, 2008, Tylee told Leslie Smith that she didn't talk about being molested with Joe and Dr. Wilcox because she thought he would be sad that I remember. No tearfulness observed. The recommendations to the court at that time were that Tylee remain in Austin throughout the reunification plan. And then beginning on July 26, 2008, and throughout the month of August, Tylee was to visit with her father on each Saturday from 10 a.m. till Sunday at 10 a.m. Exchanges to take place at Kids Exchange, visitation to be unsupervised until 8 o'clock p.m. on Saturday, at which time the supervisor will be included in the overnight visit until 10 o'clock a.m. Sunday morning. The idea of a motion detector in the hallway leading to Tylee's room was discussed. Then in August, after Tylee's first overnight with Joe, there was a concern from the guardian ad litem that said, I am curious about the contents of Tylee's overnight bag on her first visit with her father. They attach a picture. This is a blurry picture, but it includes two toy guns, a diaper, a baby blanket, and what appears to be very small clothes. This is confusing, given the mother's keen sense of Tylee's age, size, developmental stage, and interests. As you can see, this case was never ending. But in the end, more people drop dead, and there's more to follow. We will continue with this as Joe Ryan eventually moves to Arizona, and Lori and Charles eventually move to Hawaii. And I'm going to leave you with a little more of Lori's podcast saying that she wanted to kill Joe Ryan.
I'll just start by saying that I am a personal witness of the resurrected Jesus Christ. I am his advocate and I am his friend, and he is with me. I know him, and it was a hard road to get to know him. It's not an easy road, but everything that I chose in the premortal life, that I sat down with him, and we discussed what I would have to do to get to this point. I knew everything I was going to do. And everybody agreed, and I made covenants with all of these people that they would be play these parts in my life so that I could be here at this time. And it's a very important mission. It's something that I signed up for, so I blame no one but myself for what has happened in my life. When people hear my story, they're like, can't believe that you did that. Can't believe you lived through that. Can't believe that you're still here. But I too, like Melanie, have had the love of Jesus Christ wash over me. There is nothing like that on this earth. It is life-changing and eternity-altering. I love my Savior with my whole heart. I have had some wonderful experiences. I have been ministered to by the angel Moroni. I have seen him. I have had lots of angelic ministry with people who wake me up 4 o'clock in the morning and tell me things to do. I no longer need to sleep very much because I'm woken up constantly by angels and giving me instructions on things that I can do to help further the Father's work. I don't know if you want me to tell the story or you don't want me to tell the story, but I feel like you do want to.
Your story's pretty meaty.
Yeah. Are you awake now? It's been a long journey. There was a point in my life. There's a changing point in your life, right? You're a member of the church your whole life. I always loved the Lord. There's a turning point in my life that turned me to the temple. And this is what I teach everybody. And my change of heart was to the temple. So I had been married to someone who was very awful, who raped my children. And I had divorced him and gotten away from him. And he had joined the church. He spoke in state conference. Everyone thought he was wonderful. He was very good showman of all those things. And after we were divorced, he told everybody that I was this lying, crazy Mormon and got up in court and said all these horrible things about me and turned it around to where the judges believed him instead of me. And he was constantly trying to get custody of my 3-year-old daughter and just to rub it in my face. And I went through a lot of years of this kind of hard stuff, and I was going to murder him. I was going to kill him, like the scriptures say, like Nephi killed it, just to stop the pain and to stop him coming after me and to stop him coming after my children. And I just felt I couldn't take it anymore. And I would go through the scriptures and find all the things, like, if he comes against you once, if he comes against you twice, if he comes against you 3 times, then you can kill him. It says it in the scriptures. I'm like, there it is. There's my answer. I don't want to do anything that's wrong. I did not have a murderous heart. I just wanted to stop the bleeding and stop the pain. And so someone wise was speaking to me and said, you need to go to the temple. So I went and met my bishop, and I was like, I'm either going to turn my life to the temple or I'm going to commit murder. So do you want to give me a temple recommend? And I was perfectly honest because at that point I had nothing to lose. You get to the bottom rung and I had nothing to lose. And he gave me my temple recommend. And I started going to the temple every week by myself, not with my current husband, just by myself to the temple, to the Mesa Temple, which I love. We moved here from Texas to get away from my ex-husband that was doing all this. But he moved here like 5 miles away from us just to continue to torture me. That was his whole entire job. And Satan had been torturing me since I was a little kid. So I've had that my whole life. I turned to the temple. I started going every single week. And when I had little kids and we were in therapy all the time and the kids were in therapy and doing all this stuff. So I had five kids that I was dealing with. And the Lord just taught me. He just taught me week by week. He was just teaching me and he was just so patient and so kind. I would just be in there just sobbing. I would just be in there in the slush room sobbing. And people would come up to me all the time and be like, "Sister, are you okay?" And I'd be like, "No, I'm not okay." And I'd just keep crying because I didn't want to tell anybody what was going on. I was just having my own pain. And I felt like, so the court told me that if I didn't take my daughter to him and drop her off with him as a five-year-old every weekend or every other weekend or whatever the schedule was, that they would put me in jail. So I had to go take her to this monster, my little sweet little baby girl, and drop her off. And then I would go to the temple and I would cry and I felt like someone was just stabbing me in the stomach with a knife all the time. I felt physical pain. I felt so much physical pain and emotional pain and mental pain. And in the meantime, I was dealing with a husband and two stepkids and my two kids and then waking up screaming in the middle of the night and night sweats and terrors and all the things that go along with everything that happens with that. So I just turned it all over to the Lord. I'm like, "I can't do it. You have to do everything for me. Can't do it." And he did. He does it all. So for years and years, I went to the temple every week. If the temple's going to be closed for 2 weeks for cleaning, I'd go twice the week before and twice the week after. Those were the baby steps that he was leading me to. Once a week at the temple wasn't enough. It wasn't enough at all. And then I started going to the temple every day, every single day. I started doing my current husband's family's work because he's a convert to the church, and started having miraculous experiences with his relatives. Miraculous experience. Once I do it, and I bear this testimony in Sacramento all the time, I'm like, I hate computers. I'm just of the generation, I'm 45. I do not like computers. They're not my friend. I have teenagers and 20-year-olds and they do it. And I sat down one day and told the Lord, "I'm going to do family history and I don't know how to do it. So I need angels to come and type in this stuff for me because I don't know how to do it and I don't like the computers." And I went up, I turned it on. I was super frustrated. I couldn't even log in. I was having all kinds of problems. I went upstairs to take a bath. I came back down. 9 names were in my inbox, ready to print, ready to take to the temple.
And I'd like to thank...
Took them to the temple. Did that one.
I'd like to thank the website, Wicked Truth and F-Bombs, as being a fantastic source for researching this project. Have you been considering starting your own podcast? I use Buzzsprout, and it's a wonderful platform. It's easy and professional, and they will get your podcast into every major podcast platform: Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google, and more. You can start today with the gear you already have and a quiet space. You'll get a great-looking podcast website, audio players that you can drop into other websites, detailed analytics to see how people are listening, tools to promote your episodes, and more. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their messages out to the world. I'm very happy with Buzzsprout, and I know you will be too. Following the link in the show notes lets Buzzsprout know we sent you. It also gives you a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan, and it helps support our show here at Afterglow, Unveiling the Idaho Cult.